Welcome to the Angry Edmonds Podcast for November 28th, 2006, episode number 5. Hey everybody, welcome back. This is the Angry Edmonds Podcast. My name is Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
And on the show, we dedicate it to the underappreciated sysadmin, those guys who are out there like us, fighting in the trenches every day, making sure our networks are up and running, and everything keeps going great with all our computer systems and email and everything. In the show, we discuss various items, technology in the workplace, gadgets at home, and basically where we think information culture is heading. So on the radar this week, we have a new list of exemptions for the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA, that bane of our existence that basically keeps us from circumventing copyright. But every 3 years, they've kind of rule on a list of exemptions. And one of those this year was kind of exciting for me. You can legally unlock a cell phone that is locked down by a provider. So say you have a Singular phone that you bought from Singular, you can actually circumvent that protection and unlock it to use it with another carrier. Now, these exemptions only last for 3 years when they revote, and if nobody comes and tries to fight for that again, they actually will get overruled. But at least I'm glad to see they are unlocking some of these Titan copyrights. I wish they would just get rid of it altogether, but at least we get a little bit of something.
Yeah, that's really good news. Another thing happening is the latest numbers coming out now show that 9 out of 10 emails are spam. So I think we already kind of figured this out on average, but it looks like spam is here to stay, and unless the governments get tired of supporting all the infrastructure to move it back and forth. So, 90% spam. And, you know, we're all just still dealing with it.
Yeah. Have you noticed, maybe it's just me, but it seems like my spam has tripled in the last few weeks. But then when Thanksgiving hit, it dropped off for a couple of days and then came back. I don't know if it was just coincidence, but it was really kind of bizarre to me.
Well, it's weird. The numbers show that it's supposedly risen 50% in the last 2 months. So they say, you know, around Christmas time that spam, you know, really takes off because I guess some people are duped into actually buying stuff.
That's
which
funny.
Just, you know, encourages the spammers even more. So.
Wow. Yeah, spam is pretty much the worst thing ever.
The interesting thing about that is they said the things that sell on spam are the same things that people have been buying since the Middle Ages.
Really?
You know, like mail enhancement or
right,
diet pills or, you know, the things that people have been buying from snake oil salesmen, you know, all throughout the ages. So
that's amazing that that stuff still sells.
Yeah, they said it's a people problem, not so much a technology problem. Mm. So
spam sucks. Another story that caught my eye is the $100 laptop, as it's so called now, also known as One Laptop Per Child Project, or the OLPC. This thing has a serious identity crisis. But anyway, they finally actually showed off the latest prototype, which apparently cost them $150 to make the $100 laptop, which is kind of odd. But in case you don't know what this is, basically, this guy based out of Massachusetts is trying to create a laptop for third world countries for children. Seems a little misplaced, but, you know, at least he has good intentions, and it's got Linux loaded on it, which was much to the chagrin of Bill Gates, and I think they kind of made fun of it a little bit. But either way, the $100 laptop costs $150. So.
Yeah, I think their motives are good in this, but I'm just really not sure about the whole... I mean, we need to provide technology to third world nations, but I'm not sure this is the way to do it. I mean, that supposedly these laptops are very ruggedized, and you know they're going to have access to internet, and they can, you know, use a crank or whatever to provide their own power, and it's
well, there was supposed to be a crank, but they couldn't get that to work, so now it's battery powered.
Oh, great! So, you know, we're back to like, what if they don't have power where they are? So it's going to be like 1 minute of internet per child.
Well, and you know, it's a good thing it has Wi-Fi capability because there's all those access points out in the third world.
Right, exactly.
I don't know.
I applaud what they're trying to do, but I'm just really not sure that, you know, laptops are what these people need.
Right, yeah. I mean, I like the piece of hardware. It has a unique interface, and, you know, it's got a handle built in, and it's kind of ruggedized. I mean, it's kind of like a pretty version of the Panasonic ToughBook, but it's not using a standard OS. It's using Linux, but it has this weird interface. But I don't think third world countries is really the right market. You know, it's like you said, he's got good intentions, but I think he's focusing on the wrong problem.
Yeah, we'll see. This week in the Rewind, we take a quick look back at some stories that we covered in previous episodes and follow up with them. Notably, this week we are looking at Xbox Live, the video marketplace. It apparently debuted last week, and just as you could probably guess, with downloading HD across America to the Xbox 360, there were some issues with that. A lot of customers are complaining that their HD downloads took a long time, and some people ordered things and used their points on them and didn't get their videos at all. The Microsoft spokespeople have said that they are adding servers and bandwidth as fast as they can to tune their system. They didn't admit that it was, you know, a big problem. They also said that folks would be getting a refund if their downloads did not complete. So, good technology. We're hoping that they actually fix it and make it more useful.
So I could have almost predicted this just because, you know, I mean, I was excited about it, but it seemed like it came out of nowhere, and I think it did.
Right.
You know, it's like they're trying to catch up and really deliver a service that they weren't ready for. They didn't have the bandwidth for it. And if they're using the same bandwidth that they're playing their games on, you know, that's already probably close to being maxed out. They're not going to have extra bandwidth. So
yeah.
I don't know. You'd think Microsoft, with all their money, could easily support this bandwidth, but I think they just probably didn't expect the demand they got.
Right. Well, aside from Windows Update, I mean, I'm not sure their content delivery.
Right. True. Yeah.
I'm sure the Google, the GooTube guys were laughing because, you know, they deal with this on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, when was the last time you saw a new Google service go up that didn't work right? It was slow. I mean, it's pretty rare. They have brand new services come up a lot, and, you know, Gmail goes down every once in a while, but I don't know.
Yeah, usually they're right on. Yeah. So
the other story we wanted to follow up on is the Novell SUSE deal, or the Novell SUSE and Microsoft deal. There's been a lot of backlash about this whole concept. We covered this a couple episodes back, and Mark Shuttleworth, who is kind of the lead for Ubuntu, which is my favorite Linux distro, he decided that he would be generous and send out an invitation on the OpenSUSE developers list. So OpenSUSE is the free version of SUSE's kind of high-end version. So, you know, these people who are dedicating all their time and money to the free version are kind of getting screwed over because, you know, yeah, Microsoft won't sue them, but they're kind of stuck. So what he did is he got on this email list and basically sent out an invitation saying that you know, to developers who were, quote, concerned about long-term consequences of the Novell deal, to go ahead and jump ship and come over to Ubuntu. So this is pretty funny to me. This is, in my mind, what Linux is all about. You know, if somebody screws you over, you just jump ship and go to a better place. They're all kind of similar, so. But there has been some backlash. Some people didn't like this. I don't know. Did you hear any backlash about this, Ronan?
No, I'm not sure. I'm just looking at this post that he actually sent.
Right.
And he just said, you know, hey, I know posting this is going to be controversial, but he really respected you know, the excellence of the developers there, and he just thought it was disrespectful, the whole Microsoft Novell deal. So he thought, you know, hey, if anybody's looking to jump ship, you know, we got room on the Ubuntu project. So
yeah. So it looks like actually he even gave other options. You know, he said Ubuntu is one option, as are Gentoo, Debian, and other communities. So if people were upset about this, I think they're just, you know, they're stupid. I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny. I guess I'm biased because I like Ubuntu, and I like kind of their kind of tongue-in-cheek about everything. They name their releases stupid names, and so I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. You know, I really hate meetings. I mean, it just seems like ever since I got out of college and, you know, started working, it's just, in the corporate world, there's just something about meetings that just drives me crazy. You know, they're mandatory and you got to be there, and we're going to have them every week, even if no one has anything to talk about. Even if there's nothing to be said, we still got to all stop what we're doing, go down the hall, crowd into some room like sardines, and listen to the managers spout all this stuff that we don't care about. And the thing is, the meetings are never about anything good. They're about the company picnic, or some policy change, or, you know, a change to the 401k plan, or the safety advisories. They're never about the things that you do at work. The other bad thing about meetings is they're always a one-way communication. You know, it's everybody sitting there, brain dead, waiting for the meeting to be over while the manager talks. You know, a meeting should be about exchanging ideas, deciding on something, communicating in real time, and then the people in the meeting come out with action items and they know what they need to do and they reached an agreement. But that's never what it is. You know, if the manager's just going to talk and tell people what to do, that he should just write an email and send it out to everybody and save us all the trouble.
So for our in-depth story of the week, we're going to cover a software package called XAMPP. That's X-A-M-P-P. If you have heard of LAMP, which is Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP, and sometimes Perl is thrown in the end there for a double P, basically it's a web server deployment technique. Gives you everything you need all in one nice little package. You can get pre-built distributions of this, but generally you kind of build it yourself. And that's pretty much what everybody uses for their web servers anymore. I mean, unless you really are stuck on Windows, IIS, you stick with LAMP. So what XAMPP is, it's kind of targeted towards developers. Basically what it is, you download the zip file. And it's XAMPP, the X basically because they have it for every possible place you would want to use it. OS X, Windows, Linux, whatever. I think they even have a Sun distribution. And what makes it nice is you just download the zip file or a tar file. You extract it, you run the control panel, set up your passwords, and you're done. You have a nice web server all ready to go on whatever computer you have it on. So what I did, I used this for development, and that's kind of what it's targeted for. If you're making a website or some sort of web app, you use this to test everything on. So you don't have to test it on a live server, you just test it on your local box. I threw mine on my iPod, or you know, you could use an external hard drive or a thumb drive, because it's not very big. And that's where I do all my testing. And in previous times, you know, I've always used the live server, and you know, that's kind of not really a good way to do it, because then you can break your server and you gotta spend all the time fixing it. This way you test things locally and you see it how it's actually gonna be, because it's a full environment. You know, I just started using this week, and I have to say, I love it. There's not really much negative I have to say about it. The only negative, I guess, would be it's not necessarily super secure. Although, I've been told that basically since version 0.9.5, there's just a little script that you can run that will secure it for you. Now, I don't know how good that is. I still probably would rather just set it up myself. Just because that's the way I like to do things. But, you know, installing Apache web server, installing MySQL, installing all these other pieces can kind of be a pain, time-consuming, and you don't really want to have to do that everywhere you go to do development. And this way, you know, it's really just a nice way to do it. You know, OpenSSL, there's all kinds of plugins for it. And there are several other, I guess, WAMPs or LAMP setups like this, but this one seems like it's the best. It's continually updated. They maintain it quite a bit, and I don't know. I really like it. What do you think about it, Ryan?
I think it's a good tool. I'm looking at their website. Their website looks pretty well done.
It's a little cheesy in some parts.
Yeah, it's a little bit too Web 2.0-ish.
Right.
Kind of a Ubuntu takeoff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a good idea. To be able to, you know, just fire off an executable, set all this stuff up for you, and, you know, bam, you're ready to, you know, set some stuff up and test out your own web apps, you know, locally, you know, even if you don't have access to the internet. So I think that's a good tool. Do you? How big is it? Is it? Is it huge? Is it not too big? Or
It's not very big. I don't know. Let me look up real quick just how big it actually is.
Because I think you installed it pretty fast.
I mean, it took me less than 10 minutes to set it up.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, see, and you set up a LAMP server, and you're talking an hour. I mean, it takes a while.
You can run this on Windows.
Yeah, you can run it. I mean, and the nice thing is it's the same interface no matter where you go. You get this nice little control panel mm-hmm. that you open up. You can run each section as either a service or just by standalone. So, you know, in service mode, it's kind of more tied into Windows. The other thing it has also built in is FileZilla Server Edition. So you can FTP to this even.
Nice.
So what I actually did is I did a full setup. I mean, I used Dreamweaver, set up my site manager to FTP to localhost. So, I mean, it's doing a full test. You know, I'm pushing the files. It feels like I'm running on a remote server.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I preview it, I just go to localhost, and it does everything. I mean, even my even a WordPress blog installation you can do because you've got MySQL. So you've got your database backend. Everything is there that you need. And they have all the admin tools built into your FileZilla manager, your MySQL PHP admin tool. It's all there. It is a full install, but it's all just prepackaged there for you, which, you know, is great for development. And again, you know, I wouldn't really recommend it for a full-blown install. I wouldn't really run it live. Now, supposedly people do that and do it successfully, but again, you know, you don't know how all that you have to go through each config file and make sure it's tightened down correctly. But, you know, it's, and the plugins, I haven't really dug into the plugins yet, but apparently there's several plugins you can add features, and they keep it very updated. So I don't know. It's good to have something that is exactly like what you're going to be running on during testing, because you know in the past when I try to do JavaScript, you can't just run that on your Windows box and have it run correctly. And unfortunately, you know, at work, we're kind of stuck on Windows boxes for our machines, so that's what I have to do my development on. And testing JavaScript, you know, you need that server backend to test it all on. So
Right. It's
a pain to have to upload, wait for it to upload, check, wait for it to actually hit the server and download. I mean, it's all just lightning fast. You don't get slowed down by the other process you normally would have.
Yeah, it looks like it's 34 meg. But they do have numerous warnings that, you know, hey, look, this is not meant for production.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's the security's kind of loose on this, you know, for development, which, you know, if anybody's ever done web development on a lockdown server, you know, it's almost impossible to, you know, test anything. So, I don't know, pretty cool tool.
And we'll have the URL for this in the show notes, but it is on the ApacheFriends.org website. And you could probably dig down and find it from there, but or just Google for XAMPP.
Yeah, we'll have links to it.
So for a new segment this week, we know there's a lot of people out there who have their favorite tools that they use every day, and we thought it would be interesting to cover some of our favorite tools that we use in the daily grind, at work, at home, just to help get things done. And one of those things we've started using recently is a product from Google called Google Notebook. Now, what this is basically is a way for you to, while you're online, record information from websites. This is kind of something in the past where I would create a notepad. I would open up Notepad in Windows and just copy and paste text to it. And, you know, while that worked okay, I would only have that at work, or I would have to move it to my jump drive, and it's kind of a pain. Whereas this is an online package where, you know, there's actually even a plugin for Firefox and IE where you can just right-click, you select some text and pictures, right-click, click Note This, and it adds it right to your Google Notebook, which seems like a pretty basic software package, but now that I've been using it for a few weeks, man, I don't know how I lived without it. I mean, all my web research, you know, looking at topics for the website and for the podcast, stuff for work, it's just really amazing.
You clued me into this a few weeks back, and I was skeptical. I was like, oh, geez, another thing from Google.
Here we go.
You know, Joe's like using everything Google makes. So I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. But actually, you know, after a couple days, I really see the value in it. Like, you know, if, you know, if I'm shopping for audio components for my car, you know, I can go out there and look, and, you know, when I find some info or some product reviews, you know, I can just grab it, throw it in the notebook, and you can have multiple notebooks, which is also right. awesome. And it'll also throw a link in there. It's an option. So, you know, if you want, you can just, you know, have these links and some text, or you can actually edit it and you know, write your own notes in there, so mm-hmm. you're not stuck with just the text from the website. And then wherever you go, bam, there it is. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it's really, I think, the plugin that makes it usable. I mean, without the plugin, I think it would be kind of useless. You'd have to go between websites, and you have one website open, and you have your Google Notebook window open. But the plugin, down at the bottom right-hand corner of your Firefox window, you have this little open notebook option that appears. You click on it, and a box pops up with all your notebooks in there. And you can move between notebooks, and whatever notebook you have currently selected is what the note this adds it to.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and, you know, like Ryan was saying, it automatically creates the link there at the bottom of the note, so you know where it came from. The fact that it can do pictures and everything is nice. And, you know, it's such a simple thing. I don't know why somebody didn't think of this before. And maybe there's another product out there that I don't know about. But it's so simple, but it works so well.
Yeah, it does.
I love it. And yeah. Now, I've been burned a couple times. One thing is the pictures. They're actually just hot-linked to the original image. Mm. So you're not getting a cached image, which I'm kind of disappointed on that, because if I'm on forums looking for car parts or something like that, you know, some of those images break on a daily basis.
Right.
So if I'm going in my notebook and I save the image is gone if the hosting isn't there anymore, which
right.
I'm disappointed. Google, they've got all kinds of storage. Why can't they just cache that for me? Is it really that hard?
Yeah, I don't know. But it is good. I mean, like Joe and I use it, you know, when we're planning the show every week, you know, so, you know, when he finds stories he wants to talk about or, you know, something pops up, you know, he throws it in the notebook, and we have actually collaboration, you know, in some of the notebooks, so you can invite other users.
Right.
I guess they have to have Gmail accounts?
Yes, you have to have a Google account,
right.
Which is free. You don't have to have Gmail, it's just the Google account service, google.com/accounts, I think it is. And yeah, you can invite collaborators, and I don't think there's a limit on the number of people. Maybe like
yeah.
10, I don't know.
But it's good, yeah. So you, like, you know, you throw notes in there, I can throw notes in there,
right.
And you know, when it's time to do the show, we open up the notebook, we look at the stuff and review it in real time, and just decide, you know, what we want to do. So
yeah, and if you decide you want to share this information with someone, but you don't want them to be able to edit, you can share it as a web page too.
Mm.
So then they go, you give them the URL to this specific website for your specific notebook. And it shows in a nicely formatted little website, almost kind of looks like a blog.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, that's what Google gets. They get that you want information, and you want to be able to use it how you want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And they let you do that.
Do you think that they're aggregating the links and stuff that get put in the notebooks?
Oh, I'm sure they're using it for their benefit in some way.
You know,
I mean, one thing that's interesting is that, you know, it's still in the labs. It's not even reached beta status, so it's in Google Notebook Labs is what it is. But, you know, I don't see any ads. I see no Google ads.
Mm.
So I don't know if they're using, you know, you can create subheadings inside the notebooks, and maybe they're using those subheadings and the notebook names with the links inside it to kind of better their search engine, or, you know, I'm sure they're targeting people with it, making their ads better. I'm sure Google's finding a way to monetize it. They always do.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, but it is very good. So google.com/notebook, you know, will get you to the startup page for that. And also, you know, once you have your stuff created, that's the link that you'll go to manage it in page form if you don't have the plugin. But I do recommend the plugin.
Yeah, I can't really imagine using it without the plugin, but you can't. So yeah, if you're somewhere where the plugin isn't installed, you can still get to your information. That is nice. So.
Right.
So the other thing we wanted to cover in this section is kind of similar is the plugins for Firefox. There's so many plugins out there. You know, it's hard to know which ones are the best. So we thought we would talk a little bit about our favorite plugins. So Ryan, why don't you go ahead and go first?
I'd have to say mine's got to be AdBlock. I mean,
good
you
choice.
Know, I mean, it's just there's so many ads out there and pop-ups and, you know, all this junk. And, you know, AdBlock is just I was worried that they weren't going to be around, but, you know, people really like it, and it's like one of the top downloads for the Firefox plugins, add-ons. It really works pretty good. I guess my only thing now is just, you know, to make sure that they can stay on top of the whole, like, flash playing in a window, because,
right,
man, that has really been irking me lately.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah, and one thing to note also, I agree, AdBlock is fantastic. There is AdBlock and AdBlock Plus. If you are using the Google Notebook plugin, AdBlock Plus, for some reason, is causing some problems, at least on my end. I've noticed this on OS X and Windows, where if I try to do a note and I have AdBlock Plus running and I don't have the Open Notebook box open, it's this weird, I don't know how I discovered this, don't ask, but if you try to do it without that box open and you try to do a note, it fails. It doesn't add it, but it looks like it added it. So watch out for that. Basically, just stick with AdBlock and you'll be safe.
You know,
AdBlock Plus.
I tell you what, man, I'm really getting sick of all these free tools not working perfectly.
I know, man, they're totally fired. So my choice is, of course, another Google product.
Duh.
Yeah, I know, I know. I think the reason I love Google so much is that I love having decentralized all my information. Well, I guess it's centralized on Google, but, you know, it's not stuck on a flash drive. It's not stuck on my desktop.
Yeah.
And one of those things, you know, there's a lot of bookmarking sites out there, but one I know I finally made the move to centralized bookmarks, and so I used Google's service, google.com/bookmarks, and you know, I liked it pretty well, and I was figuring out ways to get that integrated in Firefox. I was using the RSS feeds from the bookmarks, and then that was working okay, but it was kind of a lot of work to set up. And then I discovered a plugin called Gmarks. And what this is exactly what it sounds like. It's a plugin for Firefox that for your sidebar, where your bookmarks show up normally in Firefox, you get another button in your toolbar on top. It's a little star. You click on that, and all your Google bookmarks show up, all organized. You can add to them there. You can change the folder names, and it all syncs with your Google bookmarks. You can have it log in automatically. You can password protect it. There's all kinds of little options like that, and it's really just a nice... It took it to that next step for me with the Google bookmarks. You know, I'd gotten kind of spoiled with it, but I was getting a little frustrated because I was starting to run into problems with a long list of bookmarks. It was cutting them off at the end,
right,
and this solved my problem for me. So I was happy to see this.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, again, the whole, like, being able to just go to work, go home, go to your friend's house.
Right.
You know, you're in the college library. You know, wherever you are, being able to always have a consistent set of bookmarks so you can find, you know, your favorite sites and the stuff that you reference. You know, it's really good.
Yeah. So those are our two favorites. Are there any other ones you want to talk about?
No. I hate everything else.
All right. Well, I have a couple other plugins that I enjoy. Kind of an add-on to AdBlock is it's called FilterSet G Updater. I like that one because it keeps your AdBlock listings kind of up to date, and it does actually help block some of the flash things. So, but that's about it.
Yeah, I will give a shout out to BugMeNot.
Oh yeah, BugMeNot. Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody sends you a link to, you know, like a New York Times article, and you know, you follow the link and it says you must log in to read this. So, you know, with BugMeNot, you know, you just right click and it says, hey, would you like to log in with some accounts that other people have shared? Sure. Bam, and you're in. And the funny thing is that you can actually watch it. It'll try like 5-10 accounts, you know, if the first one's done,
nice,
succeed, and it says, nice, hey, none of these are working. Do you want me to keep trying? And it'll just like brute force keep attacking it until,
man,
it gets in.
That's fantastic.
And the awesome thing too is that, you know, the BugMeNot now, it'll report the ones that don't work back to the BugMeNot.
Nice. So it keeps it cleaned up.
Right, exactly. Nice. So that's, if you're sick of having to log in, then yeah, BugMeNot is for you. It's that time you've all been waiting for, the Angry Admin's site of the week. This week, our pick is encyclopedia.org, the anti-Wikipedia. This is pretty good. So basically,
this is more than pretty good.
Okay, it is pretty awesome.
All right, there you go. That's better.
Yeah, so it looks just like Wikipedia, but it's just so awesome. So just like Wikipedia, they have like some of the top stories in the news. Some of the headlines include things like PS3 fans eagerly await O.J. Simpson's new game, If You Did It.
Yeah, so just as a warning, though, this is not safe for the little ones.
Right.
You know, this is freely edited, and so there's...
Yeah, anybody can edit it, and, you know, anything goes. Other headlines include Tom Cruise, who is not gay, weds Katie Holmes.
Nice.
Let's see. New storm approaches as Vancouver remains under drink beer advisory. Yeah, these are pretty good. You found one for Gentoo, right?
Yeah, so I have a a hate relationship with Gentoo. It's pretty much, you know, the most difficult Linux distro out there. A lot of the stuff on this site is kind of satire, which, you know, we both really appreciate. But so for Gentoo, one of the things that's pretty good is Gentoo, the motto: it's worth spending 8 hours trying to make something load 20 nanoseconds faster. Stuff like that. They just go on and make fun of stuff. Let's see. Here we go. So to make Gentoo fully customizable, the nerd committee which created it decided that users must be able to pick what parts they wanted on their system, ignoring the fact that some things are very important for the installation, like keyboard support, bash, etc. The Gentoo consortium simply makes all the parts of a working distribution available for download. Users then go to the website and download the parts they think they need. I don't know. It's pretty good.
Yeah, so definitely check out encyclopedia.org. It's very worthy.
Do it now! So that's going to about do it for this week. I want to thank you for listening. Please go check out our website, www.angryadmins.com. That www is important still. Don't leave out the www.
Indeed.
It feels neglected. Leave some comments. Let us know what you think of the show. If you have any ideas for rants or other topics, feel free to post those there. We're always looking for new show topics and see what you guys are interested in. It's all about the listeners, so please go there. You can also subscribe to the podcast. If you're listening to this straight from the website, you should see a subscribe link right there, or you can find us on iTunes. And you can use whatever you desire. We have all kinds of options there. So we want to thank you for listening. And my name is Joe Biddy.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
We will catch you guys next time. Did you have a good week, Ron?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
Did you see that thing on Dig about the guy about the, you know, he's mad about them checking his receipts?
Oh, the guy who's like, they walk up to him and he's like trying to leave the store and they're like, "Sir, can you see your receipt?" And he's like, "No." Yeah, that was great. I think it's in my Dig
yeah.
things.
Yeah, I thought
that. That had me rolling, man. It was...
Okay, we want to look in your bag, we want to look at the receipt, and 9 times out of 10, all they do is just, like put, like, a little check mark on your receipt, and like, "All right, thanks, have a nice day."
Yeah.
It's like, what was that all about?
Well, and the guy makes some great points. He's like, they're, like, accusing you of stealing. They're expecting you to steal, so, and it's your property. You paid for it. It's
right.
yours. Why should you have to wait an extra 20 minutes to get out the door when you could just walk out and they're like, "Hey, we need to see your receipt," and you can just keep walking? What are they going to do? They can't, like, strip search you or anything. You're not doing anything wrong.
Right. Yeah, I mean, once you leave the cash register, I mean, that merchandise belongs to you.
Right. You paid for it.
So,
and yeah. You kind of feel bad doing something like that to, like, the guy who's sitting at the door who's, like, 90 years old.
You know, his thing was he would just tell him, "No, you can't check my bag."
Right.
No thanks. And he would just walk right past him and they're chasing him out to his car. And
there was one part where he was like, the guy was like, "Hey, so are you going to wait here while I go get a security guard?" And he's like, "No, as soon as you leave, I'm heading out the door."
Yeah.